call themselves the four horsewomen of NXT, and it's hard to argue. They've changed the game. Those four women have completely changed the game, and this Divas Revolution is real, and it is on fire, and I could not be more proud of these girls.
Women's wrestling is back.
Welcome one and all, to another episode of As the Heel Turns. I'm your host, Big Al, Alexander K. Lee. Not joined by Connor Dorian today. He's off on a nice little vacation, so I hope Connor's doing well.
How does he get a vacation?
He works so darn hard, you know? He's the hardest work... No, he's not. He's just, again, he's the looks. He's the looks of this... the always important looks of this radio show. I am joined, of course, by our good friend, Dario Pop Passarelli, star of As the Heel Turns. Pop, what's going on?
It has been a phenomenal weekend of wrestling. I have to say that.
Boy.
Once I felt that I got my complete fix, I want more.
There was certainly a lot of it. Mostly good, I would say. A lot of WWE and, of course, the Smash Wrestling show that we attended on Sunday as well, which we're definitely going to talk about. But first, let's go back to that intro, that lovely intro, and two lovely and talented wrestlers in Sasha Banks and Bayley. What a friggin' match.
I mean, for those that haven't seen it, give your head a shake, because that was the best women's wrestling. I mean, there's been some in the past that maybe have come close, but I felt that they just eclipsed everything.
Credit to Trish and Lita, the first main event on Raw.
That's right.
Very solid match. Trish and Mickie James, which most people will consider the best WWE women's match of all time. It had an amazing storyline going in with Mickie the Stalker. And you know, it was pre-PG. I think this was more during, sort of in the end of the Attitude Era into the Ruthless Aggression Era. So they could still sort of put in these very tantalizing, especially for a young man like myself at the time, lesbian overtones.
Ah, you're still young.
I'm still young. We're all young at heart.
And we still have those sexual overtones.
And they put on an excellent match. However, it was marred by a botched finish, which I think anyone who watches the match again, you'll get into it, and then you'll remember that moment, and you'll see it, and you're like, oh, it was that close. It was that close to being like this, just like a real match of the year candidate. As it was, many people consider that the greatest women's match of all time, and justifiably so. I think Trish and Mickie are both really good wrestlers, and they put on a great WWE-style match.
I agree, and it was the greatest until... Saturday night.
Saturday.
And NXT TakeOver Brooklyn. They planned it as a co-main event, rightfully so. They gave it plenty of time. And for someone who hadn't been watching NXT, you really got into the story quickly. You really got to either fall in love or hate with the characters just the way they played you emotionally. And you went on that roller coaster ride and you enjoyed it. And, you know, the physicality of it. They're out to hurt each other, or try to. And, I mean, again, just left me speechless. I think anybody that watched it was just left speechless.
Bayley's character, she is so... And we're going to get into the NXT characters in general in this podcast. But Bayley's character is superb. Her work is... Again, if you've never seen her before, you see that intro, her coming out. And she was wearing an amazing white and gold outfit, by the way, which, you know, really... showed that she was sort of taking this match seriously. It looked very, very professional and main eventish. She comes out, you see her, she's all happy, but she's a little more serious than usual. You see those wavy tube men come up. God, love the wavy tube men. Love them. And you, even if you'd never seen Bayley before, you see that and you're like, I understand what this girl's all about. She's all about having fun, but plus the, you know, whatever pre-match, always excellent WWE pre-match videos. You immediately know if you've never seen her before, you've never seen Sasha before, you're invested in Bayley.
Goody two-shoes. That's the impression I got.
Yeah, and it's even better, of course, if you've been following, even somewhat sporadically like myself, NXT over the last 2 years, because they have built her up perfectly. She has so many times been close to getting a title shot or wrestling for the title and just falling short because there's been better... In the universe, better wrestlers than her. There's Charlotte, who's known for supposed to be dominant. Becky Lynch, just nasty, nasty submission specialist. So Bayley's lost
and
so
Sasha,
many matches.
The current
and Sasha,
NXT champion.
Who's beaten up Bayley many times, you know, to the point where it's like, oh, Bayley will never be on Sasha's level. She's just been handled by the other NXT wrestlers so much. But they built it up. She's got big wins over the last few months over those names. She beat Charlotte. She beat Becky Lynch. She beat Emma. All these women who had been beating her before, culminating in this moment. And what was just a spectacular match from an athletic and from a storytelling standpoint.
To me, Sasha Banks just impressed me. Her facial expressions, and we talk a lot about, you know, having personalities, especially, you know, with Tough Enough and Rusev and Ziggler and stuff like that. But it was just her. I mean, you really felt her frustration when she was frustrated. You really felt her anger when she was angry. You really got into her as a character, as well as Bayley. I mean, and both of them, like I said, it was just phenomenal in terms of what kind of match they put on. And how long was that match? Was it a 15?
It went almost 20 minutes.
20 minutes?
And unlike, and we're gonna dog these matches a bit later, unlike these multi-woman, quote-unquote, Divas Revolution tag matches, which are only about 15 minutes but feel like they're 45 minutes long.
True.
This match, it just went by. It just went by, and it was over. You felt so fulfilled. I'm glad you mentioned the expressions, because I had one of the best near falls of the weekend and in recent memory of. After Bayley takes that nasty fall, you know, Sasha pushes her off in the top rope. Not even sure what Bayley was going for there, and does like a quarter flip and almost lands on her head. Scary moment. Especially when you imagine that her mother's in the front row watching this carnage. Sasha jumps off and hits her with the double knees to her shoulder and just like sits on her and goes right into a folding pin, which in any other scenario, you think that's a three count. But based on the storyline, it was totally justified that Bayley could kick out. And the way they did it was so awesome. She kicks out and Sasha just kind of falls forward, just this look on her face like, no freaking way.
The exact point that came to my mind when I was talking about her expressions. It's like, and you know, you hear the announcers, you know, what do I have to do to win, right? But there you felt it. You saw it in her face. You didn't need anything else, and you knew that she was going. It was unbelievable. And as great as the match was, and it was, what do you think about the moment after?
Loved it. The Masked Man on Grantland, David Shoemaker, wrote a very nice piece on it about how years ago when The Click, Shawn Michaels, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, and Triple H did the curtain call, it was so controversial and such a crazy moment, even though at that point in time, fans were kind of starting to smarten up to the business.
But the business wasn't about to break.
No, it was still protected. They knew fans were getting smarter, but they did not want to play along with that. They were going kicking and screaming into the internet and the, you know, smart mark phase, which is fine.
And only one person paid the price for that.
And he did it. And he did it with a smile on his face. And look where he is now, right?
He owns it.
In this situation, it's funny. I thought they weren't going to. I saw Becky and Charlotte go in there, and everyone was crying, and I thought, Sasha must be so upset that she can't.
And it made sense, that the two of them, right? Because, again, they did a great job of bringing some of that storyline to somebody that may not have watched it, because you saw that, you know, if she wants to be the best, she has to beat the best. So she challenged Charlotte first and beat her, and then for the number one contender, she beat Becky.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, very great moment that all three of them were there. To me, yes, it looked like it was pre-planned from before, and I would have been upset if they didn't have that kind of match. It deserved it.
It did. And what was amazing was, I think Sasha was crying the most.
She was
a mess. She went there.
But she just lost. I mean, come on.
It's true. She was selling the loss first, so already upset. And then I think the emotion just totally overcame. Because again, like I said, I thought I would have been fine with her not celebrating. Like, I know what you're saying, it's cool if she did. But I'm also glad she did, because I thought she was like crawling to the back at that point or something, and like not able to celebrate that moment because she was having to maintain the storyline.
She was integral to it.
But in this situation, that's Bayley's story was such a culmination of the success for all those women, not just Bayley, but everyone involved in building her up and building each other up. I got teary eyed. I honestly did. And Connor Dorian made fun of me for it. So Connor, forget you, man. I got really emotional.
Yes, definitely a tear. And I look at that, like I said, if they didn't have that kind of a match, I would have been a little, okay, it's pre-planned, you know, big deal. But with the match that they had, they deserve that moment, all four of them. Everything that they've done in NXT has done it. I would like to see them get suspended for doing what they did. I would like to see them, you know, give them 2 weeks off. Have them suspended. Tell them that they can't do that, and then have them come back. I would love to see. Well, I'm not sure about Bayley. Bayley shouldn't be able to turn, but I would love to see them come back as the Four Horsewoman and say, "You're going to do this to us. We are wrestling. We are bigger than you." And have them just come in, and we start talking about all those, you know, nine divas and stuff like that that we know Charlotte and Becky are part of, and Sasha. But just teach them all a lesson about how to wrestle.
See, that would be interesting, and it'd be much more interesting than what they've been doing with the current crop of divas.
Have they been doing anything?
As far as I can tell, it's they put as much thought into booking the Divas as they did into naming the team Team PCB. So over the course of 2 days, SummerSlam and Raw, we had first on SummerSlam a three-team elimination match with Team PCB, Paige, Charlotte, Becky Lynch, against Team Bella.
That's what PCB means.
Yes. There we go. The Bella Twins and Alicia Fox and Team Bad, Naomi, Sasha Banks, Tamina, which was a fine match again, but there's not much of a storyline, and plus we've seen them doing this mixing and matching multi-person thing already, and they followed up on Raw with another six-person match, which this time was the team, just Team Bella and Team PCB with no Team Bad, so no Sasha Banks. So the match at SummerSlam was okay, but forgettable. Is that fair to say?
It was okay, but not very memorable. No.
It went about 15 minutes. The match on Raw, I think, went about 15 minutes, probably a little longer than that, and was certainly memorable, though not for the right reasons. Let me preface this first. The Brooklyn crowd is phenomenal in their investment in the product. They helped make TakeOver. Make no mistake, TakeOver is not the event it is if not for that crowd being so hot and so knowledgeable and so dedicated to the performers. The performers did their jobs. They were amazing. The crowd elevated that event to another level. SummerSlam, they were also good. I don't know how they maintained their energy for 4 hours, so bless their hearts. Whether they liked all the outcomes or not, they were totally into everything. Good for them. Raw, I don't blame them if they were a little punch drunk at this point. And also, it's become tradition now in the New York, New Jersey area, apparently, to hijack the show after a major event like SummerSlam or WrestleMania. Now, while their behavior during the six women diva match was deplorable, which involved them doing the wave and also chanting "We are awesome," which is disgusting. I think a crowd should never chant "We are awesome." I know they think it's funny, but it's just really stupid. However, I'm not mad at the crowd for reacting that way. I'm more mad, of course, at creative and the booking team for putting these women in a situation to fail like that.
Let's take we've had such a great example with the Bayley Sasha match. So let's take it back there for a second. The three things that I think you need. You need excellent performances from all parties involved. You need a story to make you believable. And then you need the crowd to help sell everything else that goes on, to make it bigger than what it really is. And that match had it. There's no story that's going on other than the women's revolution. That's all we know.
It's just a brand at this point. It's a hashtag at this point.
That's all they say, and that's all, but there's no story. There's no personalities that's being invested in. There's no, you know, it'd be better if there was like a one-on-one feud going on with somebody, you know, and there's a purpose behind it. Chris Jericho in Tough Enough a couple of weeks ago says, you know, it's great if you can do all these flips, but if there's a reason behind it and you make me invested in that reason, then wow, you've got me.
Yeah.
And that's it. There is no story, and that falls on the creative team for sure.
It's terrible. Their first big misstep was definitely doing the Stephanie McMahon introduction of the teams. I know it was a cool segment at the time, but what happened was it made the revolution corporate approved. You know what I mean? It immediately took something that was building somewhat organically, and then they said, oh, Stephanie McMahon says it's okay. And then the fans were kind of like, okay, we're happy to see Charlotte and Sasha. That's cool. Charlotte and Sasha and Becky are up. But they're also kind of
fresh.
Like, it makes
fresh.
You wary. Yeah, it makes you wary. It makes you like, wait a minute, now it's not cool anymore. You know, now this revolution that we thought we were part of and this was the wrestlers were part of, it's like corporate approved thing.
So Mr. Lee, how many times do you have to sit there and then come around and do exactly what I want?
Oh no, I walked into a pop trap.
Didn't I say earlier they should get suspended?
My leg's in the bear trap
Shouldn't they get suspended? Which would then separate them from the authority.
Pop, let me go.
Would it not?
Let me go, Pop. No, and that's why this is a situation where you and I are definitely in agreement. That would be way more interesting. You have to make it an anti-authority thing again. Because what kind of revolution is it where where you just imagine the...
where the boss likes it.
Yeah, where you can imagine Stephanie McMahon just taking her diva action figures and just bashing them together, which is all we're getting. The main flaw, which many online writers have pointed out, is that in storyline wise, Dario, what is the reason that these women got together? The Team PCB and whatever, Sasha Banks. Why did they get together?
Go against the Bellas in terms of their domination, mm-hmm. because they do all the politicking and they do more interested in what bags and shoes that they buy.
Right.
Hello, Divas show. Rather than being part of the wrestling.
Yes.
Or rather than the wrestling being the focus.
Now, part of, you know, stopping the, pardon me, the Bella's dominance would be stopping Nikki Bella from breaking the record for having the title, correct? Is that fair to say?
That would be absolutely fair to say.
Now, has any of them actually challenged her for the title since?
I was about to say, has there even been a title match?
I'm looking at right now. I'm gonna quickly look this up right now. But it is absolutely infuriating that, yes, ever since this storyline, I'm seeing Beast from the East, Nikki Bella defeats Paige and Tamina. But that might have been before the Revolution. Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of Nikki Bella defeats Paige. These seem to be the only times it's been defended recently. I don't think it's been defended since.
Have we even... Look, we've had an influx of women wrestlers, right? By influx, I mean three. Which, according to women, that's a huge influx of women wrestlers.
Massive.
Has there been a number one contenders match? Do we know who the number one contenders match? Is there a story behind the number one contenders match?
No.
How many days left do we have before Nikki breaks the record?
If by the time Night of Champions rolls around, which sounds like, it sounds like, oh, cool, they're just waiting until Night of Champions to have the belt be taken from her, she'll already have broken the record before that. It's after the cutoff date for her, the record being broken. So unless someone challenges her on a Raw or SmackDown for the belt, even if they don't win it, but at least to show that they had the intention of breaking the record, the storyline is completely...
I'll play devil's advocate just because I like the heat in hell. Does it make sense that the Revolution take place after Nikki breaks the record to show how dominant the Bellas have been?
I'd be fine with that if they hadn't made it so obvious that, like, the, how important the streak is. You know what I mean? And, like...
They missed a great opportunity.
Several.
Phenomenal. Several. Opportunities to do it.
Yeah. She's... I mean, look, the Bellas are defined by their blandness. I think that's... I think everyone's aware of that. I think... Have they improved a lot? Yes. I agree with everyone saying they've improved a lot. I think Nikki went from a D to a solid C minus, okay, in the ring. That's my opinion, which is I think she's serviceable. I think she's... I'm sorry. That's just... Actually, look,
I was going to say, I thought you were going to say that about Brie and then go, what? So you took a D player, you added Daniel Bryan, who's a B plus.
The math.
You average it out. Does the math work out?
The math doesn't work out.
Okay.
Again, especially since, look, if people want to say Bree's Nikki's good, that's fine. But I'm saying when I compare things, I don't like water it down. I want to compare it to the best of the best. And we saw Sasha and Bayley. We've seen Sasha and Charlotte. We've seen Sasha and Becky. We've seen Bayley and Charlotte. We've seen what really good women's wrestling is. So let's not water it down and say, oh, because Nikki is not like, you know, doesn't trip over herself and can tell a very basic meat and potato story in the ring that she's suddenly a really good wrestler. She's not. I mean, she's okay. She's serviceable.
Right. And I think that's the problem with women's wrestling until this revolution came by is that it's okay.
Yeah. They've been conditioned. That Brooklyn crowd has been conditioned and others to accept mediocrity. I don't blame them for treating a 15-minute decent Divas match the same as they would a horrible 10-minute Divas match. Because they haven't been taught the difference. You know, you have to, you know, your audiences are going to react a certain way to things, right? It took people a long time to warm up to John Cena. You know, people had been conditioned to expect certain things with him. And then when he started actually becoming a really good wrestler, it, you know, I'm frankly, people still chant John Cena sucks, which is insane. But I think the majority now know, oh, wait, this guy's actually really good.
Actually, that scares me is I don't believe the majority of people know
gosh,
that.
Gosh, that's terrible.
Well, I think they still think he's... I still think when they talk about John Cena, they fear that he is a Hogan.
You can't wrestle. Use all the same moves. We you know, we talked about this on the last podcast, I think. I'm not going to get into it again. But.
So, you know, I mean, again, like I said, I would love to see them suspended for their breaking the curtain, have a two-week vacation, and then come back. And then, you know what? Let the real revolution begin.
I agree with that. So what I would want first is obviously I'd want both Charlotte and Becky to challenge Nikki for the title on Raw. Don't even build it up. Just have them and let Nikki beat them, you know, by cheating, you know, some sort of cheating. It's fine. Let her break the record. And then have, you know, Stephanie use that almost as her excuse in addition to the quote unquote curtain call saying like that was an unauthorized show of whatever camaraderie. I didn't want that. And also you guys have failed in coming up and beating Nikki. I'd have no reason to keep you guys around. You're suspended for whatever, whatever. I think that's how they could salvage the storyline. and give these people characters, because Charlotte right now, if you didn't watch NXT and you're just watching Raw, has no character other than, oh, she's Ric Flair's daughter and she makes a lot of puns about her name and says woo. That's it. She has no character. Yeah. Becky has no character.
No, like I said, you can hook somebody in like Charlotte by saying the name of Flair, but if there's no substance there, people are going to fall off, and you're not promoting that substance, yeah, which is certainly there.
Pick it up, WWE. You've got these amazing divas. Don't waste them. Let's move back to some more positives, again, and talking about characters. The NXT characters, I'm just going to list some names of guys who I think have awesome characters, and these are all people who performed on TakeOver. Tyler Breeze.
Hold on. Are you gonna, let's do quick. Tyler Breeze. This is the selfie guy?
The selfie guy.
You know, he held his own against a legend.
He more than held his own. I think Tyler Breeze is awesome.
Well, yeah, fantastic match. Wound up losing to, like I said, the legend, Justin Liger.
Jushin Thunder Liger, 50 years old.
And again, phenomenal entrance. Phenomenal entrance.
Oh, I love his fashion show. Oh my God, his fashion show entrances are so good. So good. The Vaudevillains.
Again, somebody that I've seen them wrestle before, but never as the Vaudevillains. Perfectly in character. Storyline worked great again. You got into it, and the wrestling was there too.
Yeah, Aiden English and Simon Gotch. Great, great workers.
And Blue Pants now.
The man who's fed to the debuting Apollo Crews, a good old Canadian boy from St. Catharines, Ty Dillinger. Now, I want to talk about this guy a little bit. So he was actually signed with Developmental before NXT became NXT. I think he was with Florida Championship Wrestling. So this is like 10 years ago when he was probably in his early 20s. I think he's in his early 30s now. And he didn't make it the first time around. He's a good wrestler, but there's just no character for him. And he got cut. Went back to work with the independents. A lot of guys who get signed developmental deals with the WWE, when they get cut, that's pretty much it. You kind of get one run. They've seen you. If they didn't know what to do with you, that's it. This guy kept up his hustle, somehow found his way back. He's been there, again, acting almost as a jobber for the last 2 years with, for the last few years with NXT, especially with all these big names they keep bringing in. It's really hard, again, once you've got that reputation as an developmental talent, enhancement talent, it's really hard to find a character. Somehow he's got this thing now. He's the perfect 10, Ty Dillinger. And it's almost a variation of the Yes Man. But it's again, something that the fans could hook onto. He just keeps going like, 10, 10, 10 to celebrate things. It's very much like a Yes thing. But it's something.
Well, and his moves are a 10 out of 10. His moves were a 10 out of 10.
Sure, he's good. So it's funny that I respect this guy so much. He just never gave up. He never gave up. And again, I'm saying, look, he may never make it past NXT. His destiny may be to be a good NXT guy.
Maybe to help promote other people that are coming up, people like Cruz.
Yeah, but look, he's making a great living with the WWE, I bet. And also, he's still with the company. He's still with the biggest company in the world. So if nothing more comes from this, Ty Dillinger, I salute you.
Still successful. Congratulations, yeah. Buddy.
Baron Corbin's character, who before they were sort of pushing him as a Goldberg type, now they're pushing him as this privileged, just douche, for lack of a better word. They were showing his pre-match video was all about like, any sport I got into, I did well. Like, I won jiu-jitsu tournaments. I was on the, I made it to the NFL. I just called up the WWE and I said, hey, I want to wrestle. 2 years later, here I am. And I'm like, this is perfect.
What a fantastic storyline. Again, because we've seen this so many times the opposite way. The underprivileged one who has to work all the way through. And then what a fresh way of looking at it. Yeah, I got it. And what a great retort by Samoa Joe.
Ahead.
What a great retort. Yeah. You called them and they happened. They called me.
Yep.
And he was right. Yep. But again, a great match.
Yeah, very solid. Again, because, we were talking before the show and I said, look, we saw Samoa Joe live at Smash Wrestling a few months ago. And, just being real, he's older. He's older now. He's probably, I think, 36, 37. He's not in his prime anymore. He used to be, an elite combination of agility, speed, and power.
And size, yeah.
And size. And now, just like all of us, he's a little bit slower than he used to be, but still a very good wrestler. So him and Corbin is still relatively green. Again, let's be honest, he's only been wrestling for about 3 years, compared with Joe, who's been wrestling for something 15, 16, I think they said maybe 18 years. And you put them together, and you have to find a way to mesh those things and tell that story where one guy's more experienced and one guy's green, because he actually is, and somehow make it look believable that Corbin could stand a chance with him. And I just thought it worked. I thought they told a nice, hard-hitting story. It was a slow match, as it should be. These guys shouldn't be going all out and doing some crazy...
No five flying moves. Yeah, that's not their style, exactly.
Yeah, and I thought it was good. Really nice ending with Corbin getting frustrated and getting sloppy, sort of, they were sort of scrambling on the ground, getting sloppy, kind of Joe kicked out of a pin and went right into his chokehold finish, and it worked really well. He put Corbin to sleep. So strong effort from them. We talked about the character of both Bayley and Sasha Banks. And Kevin Owens, one of the best characters in the WWE right now, period.
Fantastic.
And Finn Balor's demon entrance in an arena of, again, 16,000 people was everything you would hoped it would be. So,
and nothing against that last match. That last match was great. Balor winds up holding on to the title. But like I said, you almost went, yeah, it was a good match. But it was still outshone by the women's title match. Nothing against the guys, unfortunately, but wow, it was a step up for the women.
Yeah, absolutely a credit to Bayley and Sasha Banks, because Balor and Owens are strong, very good ladder match. But for me, I was, after the Bayley Sasha Banks,
you were
match,
spent. You were all, emotionally
all
spent.
All I wanted to do was I can't wait till this event is over so I can just call someone and text people, yeah, and talk about it. It was so good. I want us to just get to the character thing again, and there's one more character I forgot to mention. A young lady who goes by the name of Blue Pants. Again,
I think it was, I'm not sure if that was my first or second time seeing Blue Pants.
Another good storyline, because the vaudevillains for the last few weeks have been plagued by the dastardly Alexa Bliss interfering whenever they try and do things with Blake and Murphy, the tag team champions.
Sorry, did you say dastardly?
She's trying to be dastardly.
She's like sexy and beautiful.
She's so adorable, but that almost makes me like it more. Like, I feel like she's that wannabe. Like, I feel like she is that wannabe that's like, I'm tough and I'm mean, but it's like she just scrunches over her face.
And then
she's
you
like,
pinch your cheek and
yeah,
go,
I just
so
hug her.
Cute.
It's like, yeah, yeah, she's almost like Bayley. I just
okay,
want to
okay,
hug her.
Just, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no. I think she's aware that it's not coming off 100%. I think I see a lot of criticism of her, like, oh, she sucks, she's failing at the character. I'm like, I think that's somewhat the idea. I think she knows she'll never be that. Even like a Trish Stratus was able to pull off being a real like B word, you know?
Yep.
And I don't know if Alexa will ever get to that level, but that's fine. I think it's a different play on the character. And then again, I am biased.
Just a show range at some point.
In fairness, I am biased. I'm totally in love with her. But so to counter, yes, the vaudevillains come out. And by the way, their intro, which is something I said, I don't know how that's going to translate to an arena. It certainly translated well. I think it was very cool. The whole black and white and the...
Well, I don't know if it does that in arena, but from a television perspective, that was phenomenal. Yes,
it was cool.
The black and white and the old. And
and they wrestled a good match. And Blue Pants went and got one of the biggest pops of the night when she debuted. Now, if you don't know Blue Pants, she is an independent worker named Leva Bates. She's been working for a long time. She's not signed to a WWE contract, so she still does independent stuff. So when I say she's an independent wrestler getting a big pop in a arena like that, I'm not saying like, oh, she used to be an independent wrestler, now she's a WWE superstar. No, she's still an independent wrestler. So for them to put her in that position is shocking to me and just shows how progressive the company is these days. So credit to WWE and NXT and Triple H on that front. And I just thought it was really cool. I thought the whole storyline was cool. And it was a nice win for the vaudevillains who have been around in NXT for a while. And you know, credit to Blake and Murphy as well, who are good champions.
Yep. No. Again, another great match, another great story being told. And at the end of the day, entertaining. Now, you mentioned about NXT in terms of, you know, bringing somebody like Blue Pants. And I know we haven't talked too much about SummerSlam or Raw yet. But out of those three WWE productions, can Triple H be faulted for making NXT too good?
The only thing is this, and this is a concern I bring up every week with NXT, is because the takeover shows are getting so good and are essentially just other pay-per-views and other brands' pay-per-views, the week-to-week NXTs are not as entertaining as they used to be. They've become builds for the special events, because now the special events are becoming more frequent.
A life of their own, yeah.
Much like Raws are now essentially built for whatever special event / pay-per-view seems to be coming up.
Three-hour commercial, yeah.
Sure, and that's not a bad thing, especially since NXT right now is in a talent flux because so many guys are either brought up or that in-between stage where they're both NXT performers or the Raw performers. So I think NXT is, the weekly shows are going to become really entertaining again. When you've got guys coming up again, Ty Dillinger, hopefully, Apollo Crews, who beat Ty Dillinger, had a very nice debut. There's so much good stuff we can't even talk about Apollo Crews. I think some of the new women they're bringing in, Billie Kay and Peyton Royce, are going to be fantastic. So they're just in a talent flux right now, but it's going to get back to being good. And as long as they're very careful how they handle their farm system.
Like I said, when I look back on that weekend, NXT far outclassed SummerSlam and Raw.
It was the best show.
And And I think that could prove to be a problem.
Yes.
And then that's, you know, like I said, I've been a Triple H supporter for the longest of time. And when we saw him in the opening there, which is a, you know, a little over the top, but yes. Hey, nobody does it better than Triple H when it comes to over the top.
Over the top Triple H is my favorite Triple H.
And you know what, bud? You deserved it, man. If your name is what's behind this, because again, that's what I keep hearing. I mean, obviously, it's a lot more than just him. But if it's his major hand that's been pushing all this, kudos to you, buddy. Mm-hmm. You can book a damn show.
Yeah, and here's the thing. You know, normally I don't like when... I've often criticized both Triple H and Stephanie, as I did earlier, for them thinking like, oh, I'm going to put myself in this to make it seem like a bigger deal. But I think his introduction did make the event seem like a bigger deal. It I don't know why. It just needed that kind of... Like, they could have started with just right away with a match, but I thought it was such a cool visual... The darkness, him standing in the darkness. Like, because you didn't know really what was going on. I didn't know he was standing in the ring. That's how cool it was, right? And just the WWE production team handled it so well. And then they put all the lights on. They do this, the pan of the arena. And you're like, wow, this is the
big.
Biggest.
This is
huge.
Big.
This is and real.
Yeah. No, again, it was a phenomenal Saturday
night. And again,
night.
All night. And credit to the Brooklyn crowd because it was a huge event. Now, let's talk about a few things at SummerSlam. As you mentioned, not a bad show. I didn't think at all.
For a four-hour show.
I think the 4 hours was unwarranted.
Yep.
If people enjoyed the 4 hours, great. I can't imagine being there live and watching. I mean, I know we go to independent shows that are close to. Well, they're not really close to 4 hours. With the if you take out the intermission,
no, yeah,
it's definitely considerably less than 4 hours. But yeah, you know, if you can get into it, bless your hearts. But we have to talk about the main event, which one I thought was a really good match. The ending was controversial.
Oh, the ending was. Out of left field, and it was phenomenally out of left field. I've never seen a match end like that before.
It was unique.
And I don't know if it was intentional or not, but like the camera angles worked perfectly.
They did. They're so good, production team.
For those that don't know, the bell rang, and Brock Lesnar thought that he had won because he had the Undertaker in a...
Kimura lock.
The Kimura lock. And the ref, all you see is... The ref go to the announcer. I didn't say the match to stop, and rightfully so. He didn't say the match to stop. The bell just rang. So then I'm thinking, yeah, you know, maybe somebody's fixed the ring, the whoever rings the bell there, right? Paul Heyman paid somebody. But no, then we see the reverse camera angle, and sure enough, did we see that? We just saw that after, though.
We only saw it after. And the other problem was, one problem with that was, though, is the angle they showed at, it was almost like, how did the timekeeper see that?
Right, because the timekeeper had the same angle as the camera. But never mind.
I think some people are saying that the timekeeper may have... they didn't explain this on Raw, but I think some people are speculating, almost like you would a real sporting event, that maybe the timekeeper thought, oh, the Undertaker's arm's going to get broken, so it's okay for me to ring the bell. I'm surprised they didn't make a bigger deal out of the timekeeper, though maybe that's a good thing. The last thing you need is the timekeeper becoming a character on the show, I guess. But it was... I would almost call the ending unnecessary.
Well, I don't know, because you look at it and so after he breaks up that lock and the match still goes on, Brock Lesnar turns around, Undertaker, I guess what he's been known for the last few weeks.
His new finisher
kicks him in the nuts.
I believe it wasn't the kick this time. I believe it was the old arm in the middle and then the bicep.
Well, he gets below the belt.
Yes.
For the third time now.
Yes.
And then winds up
the Hell's Gate.
And Brock Lesnar doesn't tap out.
No.
But he passes out.
But he does flip the bird on the way out, which I think is hilarious. Which is a very natural human reaction. You know, it's like rigor mortis setting in. It's like you're stiff. You know, it just happened to only be in one finger.
And which was perfect.
Which was cool. That was cool.
And then he's out. And then the referee calls for it.
Yeah.
But then afterwards, we find out when we show the opposite camera angle was that when the bell was rung inexplicably, the Undertaker had tapped out.
Yes. And of course, somehow the timekeeper with his x-ray vision saw through all the bodies and saw that.
And saw that happen. That's the story, and we are sticking to it.
I think if they had just done a clean Hell's Gate win for Taker with Brock giving the finger and passing out, that would have been awesome. You had a four and a half star match right there. I thought the match was sensational up to that point. The double sit up and Taker's face when he did the sit up and just laughing like the most insane human being on the planet. Amazing.
Classic moment.
we classic laughed. We were all watching. Yep. We all just laughed. It filled us with childish glee. Like, that's storytelling right there.
I think there's something bigger with the way they had that finish.
Well, here's the thing. That's my main question about the ending for you, Pop, is did that make you more interested in seeing a rematch than if they'd just done the clean finish?
I'm more interested in seeing about the character, about Taker's character, because, God, we've almost killed this to death, but we have discussion about faces and heels and so on and so forth. And, you know, for the longest time, Brock Lesnar was booed. Now he's not. Is he a face? Is he a heel? I mean, The Undertaker, since his return, has done dirty, underhanded things like a heel would. 3 low blows. But he still gets cheered. So again, you know, is there a face? Is there a heel? There isn't one. I look to Monday night and see, okay, how are they going to progress? What are they going to do? Not hearing anything from The Undertaker, it almost leads me to believe that they want him to be the heel. And they're pushing him to be the heel. And then Paul Heyman's retort on Monday night was like, you know, he normally would be yelling at everybody. But no, we don't blame the timekeeper. No, we don't blame the referee. Remember last time Brock got screwed, he got suspended.
He did not take getting screwed well last time.
Exactly.
A lot of people got hurt.
And this, he didn't touch anybody. Well, hold on.
Well, the return. One of our first big returns / debuts of the day
was Bo Dallas. Mm-hmm. And Bo got what he deserved. Bo believed. So again, but he didn't do anything else to anybody. When I thought for sure he had every right to flip on the referee or the timekeeper or what was going on. But he didn't. He just wants to fight him again.
Yep.
That to me is a face.
The only thing is, you know me now, I believe there are certain personalities that are beyond face and heel. And generally you've had to have been around for a while. I think Undertaker is one of them. I actually think Brock Lesnar is one of them. John Cena, obviously.
John Cena is different.
He's beyond face and heel. There is no face and heel.
No.
He's clearly a baby face.
I think he's the exact opposite. I think for somebody like Undertaker and Brock Lesnar, you just like them. But for John Cena, you either really, really like him or you really, really hate him.
I see what you're saying.
That's the difference that I see there.
I think the Brock-Taker feud, again, it doesn't matter heel and face alignment because people who are going to root for Taker are going to root for Taker. People who are going to root for Brock are going to root for Brock. I think it's a very organic, natural thing, and I think they should just... I'm fine with Taker who keep going to low blows because to me, that's not being a bad guy. That's just being smart.
Fighting the only way you can against the beast.
I'm going to get your quick thoughts here, Dario, on some of the debuts and returns. So we had the return of the Dudley Boys. How'd you feel about that? And also, to what end?
Well, I heard that they signed the long-term contract, so We'll see what happens there. I think they can help the bring up the tag team division. Having an experienced team like that there does bring some legitimacy. And for my son, Alex, if it brings back anything resembling a TLC match, we're all for it.
That Alex demographic it could be booming again. We got the debut of the newest Wyatt family member, the former Braun Strowman in Developmental, now Braun Strowman, which I guess is better somehow. Did you see that, and what did you think of that?
I saw that, and I got an issue with it. Don't have an issue with Strowman. I think his size and everything, very imposing, looks great. I don't have an issue with what happened. I honestly thought I heard that the match on Sunday at SummerSlam was going to be the last match. Why didn't this happen on SummerSlam? Did he not have a plane ticket fast enough?
I think it's one of those things where they think Raw is going to reach a wider audience, so maybe that's why. Or something to that effect.
Well, I guess, I mean, like in times when you paid for a pay-per-view separately than you did for Raw, it would make more sense to leave it for that. That's why you get people come. But again, like... I thought it was billed as the last match, you know, between them. And then now it's...
SummerSlam rematch, the exact same match.
The exact same match over. I'm sorry, but like, what kind of stupid booking is that?
I don't know. I was like, you're right. I know what you're saying. Again, it's really what we've been saying about this feud in general. What's the point?
why did you bring out Strowman on Sunday night?
What is it all? Is it all to debut Strowman? Maybe. But I hope he does well. I just feel really bad for Eric Rowan.
Is he not... Like, I thought he's hurt, right?
He's hurt, but what is he going to come back to now?
Well, could it not be a stable of four?
No, he's Strowman is the he's like Rowan but bigger and more intimidating looking.
Well, no, you have the white sheep and you have the black sheep now.
I think Rowan will be fed to Strowman, sadly, on the way back, and then soon be sent back down to NXT, which actually might be good for him.
Yeah, I can see that.
And then the other big return of the night was one Mr. Steve Sting Borden, which I thought was cool because I'd totally forgotten about the rumors that he was in town that weekend, and I didn't know what they were going to do for the statue unveiling. And I thought I liked it.
Yeah, I'm still not sure in terms of why he targeted Seth simply because he's Triple H's boy.
He's targeting injustice. Wherever there's injustice, Dario, Sting shall be.
Where was there injustice?
He should have gone after Jon Stewart, really.
Cena did.
Who got, by the way.
He got.
Jon Stewart is how old? Sorry, let me look. So we were talking about Jushin Liger performing in the ring at the age of 50. Jon Stewart is 52 years old. He really took an attitude adjuster. Now, attitude adjuster, again, from an observer standpoint, seems to me like a pretty safe move to take. It looks like John Cena is extremely strong. He has control of the other person's body for most of the move, it seems. But either way.
And it's funny enough, I don't know how I can say this, but I'm going to say it. It did look like he cradled John Stewart through the attitude adjuster.
But either way, you're getting flipped over your head and thrown onto your back.
On a bouncy mat.
It ain't that bouncy. It ain't that bouncy, man. Anytime I felt a ring, I still can't. Anytime I've gone up and up close to a ring and just felt it, I can't believe people fall on that damn thing.
But we knew something like that was coming. But what did you think about his reasoning behind why he turned on John Cena?
It was sensible. It was sensible.
I liked it.
Yeah.
And having Flair there
made
it all the better. Love Flair. But John Stewart, I wanted Cena to win. Yep. It was just that was a great expression.
And I also I liked that for the most part, Stewart, before Cena showed up, was actually cutting like kind of a serious promo. He wasn't like doing a jokey promo or doing like a fanny promo. He actually sounded like really intense. And I'm like, okay, like this is working. Like this is a good idea. I just want to touch upon Sting one more time. Is it weird? It's one thing is I'm not even a big fan of Sting. Is it weird that like, I think it'd be kind of cool if somehow he got the title from Seth Rollins? Is that messed up? Is that just being sick?
No, that's funny. I should be having it more that feeling than you do because I go back and say, you know what? It's just sentiment, right? And I grew up when Sting was young and was the face of WCW for the longest time with him and Flair. I mean, it was phenomenal. So, yeah, I think there's nothing wrong in terms of you feeling that, yeah, it'd be cool if he rides on. We all want to see our heroes ride out on top. And at one time, he was a hero to a lot of people. I don't know if that's going to happen.
The thing is, what a testament it would be to Seth Rollins' extraordinary skills, both again in his developing character work and his in-ring work, if he could convince you that a Sting win was good, which I think he can. I guarantee you, you give him 15 minutes with Sting and you know some decent build-up in between now and Night of Champions, I bet you he could tell that story. I think Seth Rollins is that good.
I think it's out of his hands. Because that'll be Rollins' second match of the night.
Oh, at Night of Champions. Because every title must be defended.
So I think he has to defend the U.S. champion first to Cena. And then he's got the finale against Sting, which means, again, second match. And that already gives Sting an advantage. And if he loses both, is he still Triple H's boy?
There you go. It seems so logical that now I know they're not going to do it. Moving on to another important title match. Before SummerSlam on Sunday, you, Connor, and I went to Smash Wrestling's Super Showdown 3 in Etobicoke, Ontario, and we were hoping to see the phenomenal Candice LeRae take the title from her boyfriend, the current Smash Wrestling champion, Johnny Gargano. And I'm sorry to say she fell short, but boy, did she come close.
Is that a height reference? Because I know she's short and I'm short.
What a match.
Oh, it was phenomenal. Long live women's wrestling, because today's age of women's wrestling is phenomenal. I don't know how they put on the match. And, I mean, we saw her afterwards. She looked okay, but she took some bumps.
there was so much high risk stuff in there. And I don't even necessarily dangerous stuff, but like intricate sort of grappling and high flying work and counters that, like, you know, and if you mess that up, it throws off the whole match, right? They nailed pretty much everything. I can't think of any significant errors they might have made. And if there are, the quality of the match was so high that I don't even care. I'm just going to gloss over it. It was really good. They were just, they have such obviously amazing chemistry, and it showed.
But having, you know, her being thrown like a lawn dart into the middle turnbuckle head first.
My goodness.
On the outside of the ring. They're both standing on the outside of the ring, and they both turn to each other, and he super kicks her, and the sound of his boot hitting her face was, I swear to God, I think I crawled underneath my chair. I was scared.
And again, he really, there was no pulling. He hit her with a suicide dive. I mean, generally in an intergender match, it's the smaller female wrestler that's flying outside of the ring so that she can hit and, you know, be, you know, caught by the larger male wrestler. No, he went flying at her.
It's unbelievable. And what is her move? I don't want to say anything perverse on the show.
We can
here.
Say it because it's a technical word.
What is it? The crotch? No.
It is called the balls flex.
The balls plex. That's what it's called. Okay.
A devastating maneuver. I believe invented by the great Lou Thesz, or Buddy Rogers, I believe was the original.
Which, for those that haven't seen it, she stands behind the intended victim, slips her hands between that person's legs, male or female.
Yes.
And then tends to lift them up over her head so that they land back like a suplex.
Yes.
But she picks him up from that victim's crotch area.
The crotchal area. The crotchal region, I believe,
crotchal.
As a doctor.
Crotchal, you know, region. Doctor, that's not a region. Word.
That's
man.
Totally a word.
That's not a word.
It is a devastating crotchal. Maneuver. And she hit it on several members of Fourth Gun who tried to interfere, by the way. Poor Drew Gulak was in front of us.
And made it so believable.
Oh, just curled up in the fetal position, clutching at his groin.
And then him and the Kentucky gentleman... Chuck
Taylor. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, and we should say the newest member of Fourth Gun, the much hyped mystery masked man, popular independent worker Chuck Taylor, very talented guy, much more known for his sort of comedic work, but showing off his dark side here.
Well, showing off his dark side more was Gulak, who always is a great in ring performer, phenomenal technical wrestler, but for him to like have a seat beside us.
Oh yeah.
And the moody facial expression.
There is a picture up on our Facebook page, all the pictures from the show. And one of them, yes, is of Drew Gulak sitting right next to Connor and Pop. And as I'm taking a picture of him, I'd like to take a lot of pictures of guys when they get close. Normally, they just, you know, they go on with the show. But he saw me and he gave me just that little stink face. And I'm like, oh, gosh. Like,
yeah, I know. And then I try to take a picture with, you know, my Android phone over there. And he sticks his hand up right in front of it. It's like, give me the hand. Oh, buddy.
Gulak, definitely one of the stars of the night. On really from top to bottom was such a strong show. Again, you know, we said Candice and Johnny, well, we can talk about that more, but also I want to point out.
Talk about it forever, that match.
It was so good. Kirk Wormack stepping up with guys more experienced than him, Matt Cross, Pepper Parks, Rich Swann in a four-way, and definitely more than holding his own. I think Kirk Wormack's a rising star.
He was a member of the tag team, the Gulp Brigade,
correct?
He's with
the Gulp Brigade with Shane Sabre, yes.
Phenomenal tag team match that we saw the last time we were there a couple of months ago. The one thing that killed me about Wormack this time was the promo beforehand.
And James Key.
I was on the floor. Stitches.
It was funny, yeah.
Was saying that, you know, Wormack kept threatening to be on the show. No, I can't have you. There's no room for you. I'm going to hurt you. Yeah, right. But, you know, there's still no room for you. I'm going to hurt your feelings. Love that line.
Yeah.
Love that line.
He really showed, again, both good character out of the ring in that skit and also, again, really, really good wrestling with guys like Pepper and Rich and Matt Cross.
It was a great four-way.
We also had a good match with Brent Banks and Facade. Facade continuing to show his insane agility. He's just at home walking on the ropes.
On top of the ropes, yes.
He's barely on the canvas, really.
He is. And again, Banks is such a great worker, too.
Banks sucks. What?
Is that mystery man here now?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Someone just ran to the studio and said Brent Banks sucks. I don't like that.
No, he's going to get you next month, I tell you.
We had Courtney Rush and Vanessa Craven face the Kimber Bombs, a matchup we've seen many times, though...
No, I haven't. This is my first time, I think, seeing the Kimber Bombs as a team together.
Okay, well, they're great.
Yes, obviously.
And they had a little bit of a nasty surprise for Courtney Rush at the end of the match.
I was shocked and appalled. How dare you bring scissors? How dare you bring scissors? And then cut Rush's hair? That was so uncalled for. And I tell you now, Kimberly and Cherry Bomb, you're going to get it at Canusa September 13th.
That's right. The Canusa Classic coming up. Another all-women's show. The real Divas Revolution has been happening for a while now. People don't miss it if you haven't been to a Smash show. Not just the all-women's shows, but a Smash Wrestling show in general where women's wrestling is always showcased. As we said, we had the tag match and we had one of their best females challenging for their top title. Chris Hero, the always lovable Chris Hero, wrestled a corker of a match with Tarik. They beat the living hell out of each other.
Oh, God, did they? And they kept trying to up one each other. And I think the chop sounds and...
I would have liked it if they'd gone with the premise more at the beginning. They were sort of like, Tarik was saying, I bet you can't wrestle just like an actual match without, you know, because Chris Hero is known as being one of the deadliest strikers in the professional wrestling world. I mean, his elbows, his knees, his chops, his kicks. I mean, you get in there, he's going to beat the crap out of you.
Yep. And they started wrestling.
Yeah.
And they did a good job of it, telling the story.
Yep. And it was Tarik who I think broke first. I believe I did see him throw an elbow.
Oh, he
did.
It was definitely.
You just took the lid
and
off.
And Hero had warned him, said that you do anything shenanigans and it's over.
I'm going to knock you out.
And he did.
And they had a great hard-hitting match. Tarik, you know, everyone knows Chris Hero's reputation all around the world. He's done it all. He's spectacular. Tarik, I want this guy to keep getting more credit, the former Alex Vega, because he's a great wrestler. And I think he met Hero strike for strike, which is not the smartest thing to do.
No, but again, it shows in terms of his versatility for being, you know, a technical wrestler and being able to sell... being in a hard-hitting match too. Again, you know, I love the fact all four members right now, although I still don't know too much about Chuck Taylor, so reserve word on him. But yeah, the fourth gun team all can wrestle. I've got personality. Fantastic.
There are a few multi-man tag matches as well. I want to shout out the pre-show match, Ben Ortman's, Preston Miles, the Space Monkey, and they're facing a team of guys who I don't know all their names, though I do recognize, again, guy making his second appearance with the company and a... future Legends veteran, the camp in North Carolina. Plunkett, good to see you again, buddy. And I thought they had a fun match with Space Monkey whipping people with his tail.
You know, I've Twitter so many different people, and I keep seeing different promotions in and around the city. If I'm not mistaken, whether it's Alpha One or Superkick, but I see a lot of posters of Space Monkey being on
He's
there.
He's around.
And I've, you know, always wanted to say, hey, well, I see him. And I was freaked out when I saw him coming out in the spacesuit. I went, oh, yeah, I get to see him now. And I was pumped for that match.
But, yeah. And then the other tag match was another match of the night candidate until the main event came along. The Overdogs, Greed and Sebastian Suave versus Fourth Gun, represented by Drew Gulak, Chuck Taylor, and then the Super Smash Brothers, of course, Player Uno and Player Dos, Stu Grayson. A great match. They guys have such good chemistry. And Chuck and Drew, like we said, they were just so on with their expressions. They added an extra layer to that matchup. I thought it was great.
It's phenomenal. And again, another great promotion from Smash. It was awesome top to bottom. A lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
And then Candace came so close.
Oh, it was heartbreaking.
Johnny had to hit her with the kitchen sink. I think he hit her with three or four consecutive just... bombs near the end of the match to finally put her down.
She is, I think you mentioned before, very close to, if not the best wrestler at Smash right now.
WWE, if you're listening, and I know you are, I know Vince McMahon listens to this podcast religiously, sign this girl and also let her keep doing the balls flex. That's all. I'm sorry. It has to be said. She has to. If you bring Candace in, you bring the balls flex with you.
Sure. Right.
Now, I wanted to talk about Tough Enough, though we're running a little short on time, speaking of new additions to the company. But congratulations to the winners, Josh and Sarah Lee, which we had kind of been predicting for, I'd say, the last couple of weeks.
Yes. And Sarah, although, you know, we said before that she's probably the least talented of all of them, it was a decent match in terms of, I mean, as far as decent goes, they were all horrible. But she was surprising. She was surprising in terms of what she put on there. And I was going into that night cheering for Amanda. I thought she'd be the better overall. And honestly, when she started pulling that personal stuff...
That was not good.
I went, really?
Yeah, a quick note. So we'll just say she accused Sarah of being a ring rat, which is a very common term. It's essentially like when people call someone a groupie for a rock band, which is, oh, you just, you know, you get to hang around the bands and you only hang around the bands because you're trying to sleep with the band members or in this case, the wrestlers. Now, that may or may not be true. Look, I don't know Sarah's personal story. Maybe she has had a lot of...
And who cares?
One, it's none of our business. Two, this is... and Mick Foley did a great Facebook post about this. You can find it. You can find it on his Facebook page or just look it up about... the fact that we still have this stupid slut shaming in our society where if a woman, you know, chooses to be promiscuous, she's held to a different standard than a man. Because if a male wrestler, you know, let's look at CM Punk, for example. He's notorious for having had a relationship or hooking up with numerous female wrestlers. I have never once heard someone say a derogatory word about CM Punk.
He gets patted on the back for it.
Oh, what a man this guy is. He's a stud. He got to do with this girl and this girl, you know. But obviously a female does the same thing and suddenly she's supposed to be ashamed, or at least that's Amanda's opinion.
And that's a woman shaming another woman. It's not like even a man doing it.
It just, it was totally uncalled for.
It didn't even make sense.
It didn't make sense. To bring it up was senseless. Apparently she had also brought it up, I believe, on Tough Talk last week. I haven't been watching Tough Talk, unfortunately. So this is the second time she brought it. I guess she really wanted to drive it home to make sure that she got the fans on her side. But Sarah ended up getting, I think, 64% of the vote. So that didn't work.
Did you think the judges tried to sway the WWE Universe into Josh?
Yeah, of course. Definitely.
And
definitely.
They were not thrilled, right to do so.
Yeah, they were not thrilled with ZZ's match. And I understand why, because... Again, I hope we can talk about Tough Enough a little bit more when Connor comes back next week. You know, not take a whole segment, but...
Since he's the one that made us watch it.
And maybe not next week, but whenever we get a chance to talk with Connor. Because I thought it was fascinating seeing Cesaro throw guys around. It's a very scary thing for a professional wrestler to be in the ring with a non-professional wrestler.
Yes.
Especially when it's a big, heavy guy like a Josh or a ZZ.
There's a big trust factor.
Yeah,
there.
You're really more worried about... yourself getting hurt than hurting them. You know how to take care of them. The question is, do they know how to take care of themselves and take care of you? So you put someone like there. Thank God they picked someone like Cesaro, who is so strong, so experienced, and again, could carry you or I to a match, really. So he did. He really did his best. But I just love when he would throw guys. Like, he just deadlifted like ZZ off the ground. And I'm like, you know what? ZZ's going up whether he knows what move is coming or not. And I think he hit him with like a gut wrench suplex. And I'm like, man. To be able to do that with someone who doesn't know what they're doing and not hurt them is amazing. Yeah. He made both ZZ and Josh look like they were actual professional wrestlers, which they are not yet. I mean, I guess they are by the most technical definition. So that part is fascinating to me. And credit to Alicia Fox as well for doing what she could with Amanda and Sarah Lee. So we'll wrap up there for now. I don't know if we're going to get a chance to talk about Tough Enough again in the future, but if we don't, you know, no big deal. I think we're okay. I think
we had more than our fill.
I think we've talked about the show more than enough.
Final word, you know.
Please.
Josh, Sarah, enjoy your $250,000. Enjoy your one-year contract. Soak up the entire experience. I don't think there's anything after that, though.
How messed up is it that they're making... I wish they wouldn't give them the $250,000. Like, they would just give them a contract. Because that upsets the pay structure big time. I don't think your average NXT worker is making $250,000 this year.
No. No. But, again, it's... Your average NXT worker hasn't put on 10 shows. Like, in terms of Tough Enough and stuff like that. I don't have a problem with the money. But Josh does have... I think a chance, but definitely he's going to take a lot longer than a year for it to happen. So,
Samoa Joe, Finn Balor, Baron Corbin, Emma, Charlotte, whoever ends up working with these two, please be gentle. It's not their fault that this contest is.
No. And I'm not even doing this in the my son Alex and JP's love of blood. I'm saying this in this. You know what? They need to learn the ropes, and there's only one way of doing it. And if they need 10 years of experience in 1 year, then guess what? That's a lot of bumps.
Good luck.
Yeah.
But now, signing off for Daryl Pop Passarelli and myself, Big Al, Alexander K. Lee. This was another episode of As the Heel Turns, and I just want to say one last time, thank you, thank you, thank you, Sasha Banks and Bayley. That is why we love them.
Exactly. Love you, Joe.